Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Mark Hetfield, the president and CEO of HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, on the refugee crisis. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. The long run of Jewish fall festivals have finally concluded with the celebration of Simchat Torah last week, and we've entered the holiday-free season lasting all the way up to Hanukkah. There's even a special name for the month that begins this week, Cheshvan, the single month in the whole Jewish calendar with no holidays. It's called Mar Cheshvan, literally the bitter month of Cheshvan. But if you happen, like me, to be in the professional Jewish business, there's something refreshing about the conclusion of a month-long overload of holiday happenings. After this non-stop glut of festivals, celebrations, fasts, and feasts, it's actually a relief, a machaya, to get back to something akin to regular life. Don't get me wrong, I love the Jewish holiday season, and each festival has its own meaning and beauty. Each explores an important aspect of ritual and communal life. Every single festival, from Slichot through Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, from Sukkot to Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah, has something unique to teach us about how to live life well and meaningfully. But while this is an exhilarating period filled with festivity, it is also an exhausting time with many, many additional demands and requirements for a rabbi or a cantor, or both, like me. And that means that when we finally settle down and just have regular Shabbat once a week, it's a genuine delight. I guess at some point, you can get too much of a good thing. However, it is not truly possible to get too much Shabbat, in my opinion. The Sabbath comes weekly as a way to remind us that whatever else happens in our lives, we can, should, and need to take a full day to focus on something other than work or our daily routine. And that day can become a time of holiness, peace, and spirituality, if only we do it well. To play us in this morning, then, from the Shabbat service of welcoming the Sabbath, here's a version of Lecha Dodi, the song Welcoming the Bride Shabbat, sung every Friday night. This recorded by the late great Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach of blessed memory. That was Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach singing Lecha Dodi for Shabbat. Karl Bach was such a fascinating figure in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, a charismatic Hasidic rabbi whose songs, guitar playing, and English lyrics, as well as his stories, were as close as the Jewish world gets to a Bob Dylan, Paul Simon, Billy Joel kind of figure. Oh, wait, those guys were all Jewish, too. Well, actually, what Karl Bach did was create an entire genre of neo-Hasidic folk-style music that energized the Jewish prayer experience all over the world, and the music he created continues to do that. Yesterday in Temple, we began chanting the Torah once again, beginning with Bereishit, Genesis. This week, we'll chant the famous story of Noah that starts with evil, an ark, 40 days of rain and a flood, and continuing on to include a raven and most memorably a dove and a rainbow. To play us in this morning on the theme of Noah, here's the classic Israeli singer Moti Kaspi singing Noach.
Noach, lo shachachnu ech bagesher uvasahar. Noach, lativa asachta ech hayot hayahar. Shtayim shtayim mikol min, ha'arye ve'ha'mamuta, ha'gamal ve'ha'shibuta, ve'gam ha'ipopotam. Ech patachta ech ha'tzohar. לשוט על פני המים נוח כל החלונות סגורים כמעט חודשיים וכבר אין לנו אוויר לאריה ולממותה לגמל ולשיטוטה וגם להיפופוטם פתח לרגע את הצוהר.
That was Israeli singer Moti Kaspi and his song Noach. Send out the dove, he urges that truly ancient mariner. We'll have more about Noah a little later in the show, but when we come back in a few moments, we'll meet our guest this morning, Mark Hetfield, president and CEO of HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, on the refugee crisis today all over the world, the largest crisis since World War II. Find out what's going on with it, what you can do, and what HIAS is doing when we return in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice. Because every day counts.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Mark Hetfield is the president and CEO of HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, the venerable but extraordinarily relevant institution dealing with immigration all around the world today. He's had a 25-year career, much of it at HIAS. Most recently was the agency's senior vice president of policy and programs. We are speaking at a time of great challenge in the refugee world. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning, Sam. Thank you.
So first of all, mazel tov on becoming president CEO after a long career in dealing with these issues and others. Tell us what's unique about this moment in history.
Well, this is the biggest refugee crisis we've had since the end of the Second World War. And it's truly a global crisis. A lot of people are talking about Syria, but unfortunately it's not limited to Syria. We have crises in Asia with the Rohingya from Burma, with other groups from Burma. Colombian refugees remain an intractable problem. Somali refugees, South Sudanese refugees, refugees from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, internally displaced persons in Ukraine, and of course, Iraqi refugees and Syrian refugees all make this the largest refugee crisis, certainly in my lifetime and since the Second World War.
You know, many people will say, well, why isn't the UN doing something? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, the UN can't really lead. States, and I don't mean that as a criticism of the UN. It's just an institutional fact. States have to lead. The UN is only as strong as the states within it. And the fact of the matter is that the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, has been screaming about this for years now, particularly the crisis in Syria. And the rest of the world has just stood by and watched as hundreds of thousands and then millions of refugees pour out into Lebanon, into Jordan, into Turkey, now into Egypt, and now into Europe, just waiting to see when things were going to explode. And we finally reached that point. So I don't fault the UN. I fault the countries inside of the UN. I fought the Security Council, which again are the countries inside of the Security Council, the governments inside of the Security Council, for being asleep at the wheel and for waiting until it's really too late to act.
We will talk much more with Mark Hatfield of HIAS when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is the cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at toojewishradio, TOOJewishRadio18 at gmail.com. Visit our website at toojewishradio.com, where you can stream our shows or download us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. This coming week in Temple, we'll read the great Torah portion of Noah about the most famous sailor in all history, a man who rode out the storm to end all storms in an ark. From a forgotten Broadway show on the theme of Noah called 2x2, starring the late Danny Kaye. It's about what happens when you finally get off the ark, a delightful song called When It Dries.
Why are you so gloomy? We're alive and we're afloat. After 40 days and nights, it's shipshape on the boat. Look, the sun's come out again and turned a rosy red. How can you be gloomy when you think of what's ahead? It's gonna be some terrific place when it dries, you're gonna see wide and open space when it dries, it's gonna be some terrific place, you're gonna see wide and open space, we're gonna have such a human race when it dries.
The greenery's gonna have a shine when it dries.
When it dries!
The world will be full and fat and fine when it dries.
When it dries!
The greenery's gonna have a shine. The world will be full and fat and fine.
The best thing of all, it's one third mine.
Half a million growing things will spring up from the ground.
Half a million bodies will be floating all around.
Room to work and grow and build a company of men.
Think about how much we can contaminate again.
There's gonna be air beyond compare when it dries.
When it dries.
With drinkable water everywhere
when it dries. When it dries. There's gonna be air beyond compare with drinkable water everywhere.
As long as you don't have people there
when it dries.
When it dries.
When it dries.
The song When It Dries from the old musical 2x2, music by one of the most successful Broadway composers of all, Richard Rodgers. Of course, Rodgers was Jewish, and his most famous partners were the Jewish guy Lawrence Hart and the descended from but not raised as a Jew Oscar Hammerstein. In any case, the great tale of Noah is shared to one degree or another by other ancient books of lore and legend, most notably the Sumerian Epic of Gilgamesh, another guy who had to build a big boat to save humanity. But rather than read to you an ancient Akkadian, I thought that David Steinberg's version of the moral of the Noah story might play better on radio.
Noah! Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, all three of whom had an IQ totaling 70. The Bible states explicitly that Noah was a righteous man in his generation. The Bible does not add words. Why do they say in his generation? Because we find out later on in Genesis that Noah liked to drink. He was, in fact, a drunk. The Bible states it clearly. Later on, Clifford Odets backs it up. My contention is this. If you had to live on a boat with 10,000 mating hippopotami and those three sons for conversation, you too would be righteous only in your generation.
There is something inherently comic about being stuck on a big boat with a big quantity of animals. After the Garden of Eden story and the Exodus tale of the crossing of the sea, I suspect Noah might be the single best-known biblical text. It's probably the combination of all those animals and that rainbow. With those two symbols, you get everyone from preschool kids to college co-ed dorm rooms involved. And once you toss in that dove of peace, you have another oft-used and universal symbol with that olive twig in its mouth. Tons of marketing opportunities for the manufacturers of toy animals and rainbow pillowcases, too, I suppose. But like so many biblical tales, there's more to that story than meets the eye. It begins with people doing evil. It ends with more people doing more evil acts, in spite of the flood, the ark, the dove, and the rainbow. The real message of Noah is that we need something beyond mere symbols or leaps of faith to motivate us to be decent, good human beings. We need the structure of justice and morality that our Torah ultimately provides. Well, we have 13 months until we elect a new president of these United States, and we continue our special election year and more feature, the 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report, in-depth coverage, unusual stories, and the finest opinion on the air as we choose the new leader for our nation. You know, the Bernie Sanders news won't go away now that the only Jewish candidate for president has continued a meteoric rise in the polls. Sanders doesn't talk much about growing up Jewish in Brooklyn, but he recently said the two aspects of his upbringing have exerted a lasting influence. One was coming from a family that never had much money. The other was growing up Jewish, less for the religious content than for the sense that politics mattered. Sanders' father was a Polish Jew who, at the age of 17, came to America and struggled through the Depression in Brooklyn. Just after World War II, Sanders' family got a call in the middle of the night about a relative of my father's who was in a displaced persons camp in Europe someplace, Sanders said. He learned that many of his father's other relatives had perished in the Holocaust. His parents had been fundamentally apolitical, but Bernie Sanders took away a lesson. An election in 1932 ended up killing 50 million people around the world. And so, for Bernie Sanders, politics matters. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We have just finished the endless Jewish fall holiday festival cycle with Simchat Torah last week. Wonderful time of year, Sukkot, beautiful in Israel, and a vacation time, but also a religious time. So really kind of a wonderful combination of factors. Traditional to go to the Kotel, the Western Wall, for the Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessing, and hundreds and, well, really thousands and thousands of Jews go for that. As a Kohen, that's what Kohan comes from, I've had the opportunity to do Birkat Kohanim there, the priestly blessing, and it's unbelievable, weird, powerful, fantastic.
Very powerful.
So tell us about your experiences on Sukkot and Sukkot vacations and Sukkot time in Israel.
First of all, it's a great time to be a teacher in Israel, since before Yom Kippur and after Sukkot, there is a huge, like a holiday, endless holiday, so it's right. Great to be teacher. And for the parents, is you know, it's something else.
they have their kids.
They just finished 2 months of Chofesh Gadol,
summer vacation,
and then they have like 4 days for Rosh Hashanah, and then you know, another 2 weeks for Sukkot, Yom Kippur and Sukkot. A
couple of days for Yom Kippur and then Sukkot, and sometimes it goes straight through.
Yeah. So, but as you mentioned, the very popular sites will be, you know, actually all over. It's still summertime, kind of hot, so people will go to the Sea of Galilee, of course. All the beaches will be packed.
People it's go a, to Eilat.
It's a camping. It's a camping season.
Ah,
Kinneret
camping.
Will be tents, like all over. You won't see only tents. And of course, Jerusalem, it's a beautiful place to be there every time. But the fall is like amazing, you know, and the Kotel, of course. So, but again, all Israel is busy.
Eilat, everybody's going somewhere.
To Metula, yeah.
I will tell you, years ago, I remember on our Sukkot vacation, we went scuba diving. That's a great time of year to do it. It's not insanely hot, but it's
Nachon.
Still nice. The water
in Eilat or in Betzet? Or...
We went in Eilat, and then we also crossed over. In those days, it was safe to do so.
Oh,
crossed
Sinai.
Sinai into Egypt and went down to Sharm el-Sheikh, which has some of the
lovely.
Great scuba diving in the world. And met some Israelis there who were scuba diving, and just a fantastic experience. Also, I will tell you, never go scuba diving with an Israeli who just got out of the Israeli Air Force and is a pilot, because they don't believe it's possible to die. And trust me, in scuba diving, it's possible to die. But that's a long, long story I won't share. Sukkot is a great time to give thanks. I know we've finished the holidays, but it's never a bad time to have gratitude to God for the good things we have. And Israel in the fall is about the most beautiful place in the world.
Nachon, I agree.
So everybody should go to Israel this year and experience
that. Yeah, definitely. And there is all kind of different trips.
There are.
You can contact the Israel Center and we can help you find great trips to
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely. You can contact Rabbi Kohan too. Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk next week. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about the huge refugee crisis engulfing Europe. And we are now up to the point of discussing the more advanced countries, the countries they mostly want to go to, like Germany, and how they are responding to this crisis. We talked about how it's not exactly a European Union problem. It's kind of being dealt with on a nation-by-nation basis.
Right. The refugees mostly, rightly or wrongly, want to go to the countries that they perceive as being the most prosperous and offering the best opportunities for employment, for social services, for education, for housing, et cetera, et cetera. And in their minds, those countries are Germany, Holland, Denmark. You know, more rationally, you might include Luxembourg in that list or Sweden.
Yeah, Norway. But, I don't know. Any.
Well, Norway's not in the Union, technically.
That's right.
Norway's in NATO, but not in the European Union. Interestingly, England's not on the list. France isn't on the list. Spain's not on the list. And even Italy, which is a country of first refuge for many arrivals from North Africa, is largely a country of transit, as is Greece. In other words, the poor southern tier of Europe, whether it's Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, are transit countries. And for some reason, France doesn't figure high on the list of most refugees desired. Their dream destinations are Germany, Holland, Denmark.
It's very strange when you think about it, because France has quite a large Arabic-speaking population.
Right, but one could also argue that therefore France is particularly neuralgic about having more Arabs.
And not likely to take more.
And so, I mean, the two questions, why are reactions so different and so skeptical and unwelcoming and kind of stingy, not very open-handed in the richer countries? And is there hope for any change in the future? Are interlinked. And I think what we have to remember about these larger, wealthier Western European countries and Northwest Europe in particular is they truly are multifaceted democracies with lots of different interests and lots of different visions of how society should be and what the model Germany ought to look like or the model Holland or whatever. There's not unanimity of opinion. There's not a dictatorial government that says this is how we should be. It's very much like Israel. I mean, I think American Jews frequently forget when they talk about what's good or bad for Israel, what should or shouldn't be, is that Israelis themselves have no consensus about these questions.
Sure.
Israelis themselves have no consensus about what the ideal identity of Israel is. Well, that's also true for Germany and Denmark and Holland. There's wide differences of opinion. But also, in all of those countries, there's a sense of we already have enough others with a capital O. We have a large percentage, larger than we want, and we're not comfortable with taking it anymore. So their doors have been less open than the doors of Greece and Turkey. The countries to which most of these refugees most badly want admission are the ones that are busy locking their shutters and closing their doors. And I think that the European Union in many of its many meetings needs to tackle this issue head on. And I think the U.S. needs to show some leadership, too. I mean, I think Obama recently announced an initiative to take 10,000.
Yeah, that's just a drop in the
bucket. That's ludicrous. You know, we're a big country. We basically have the same population as the European Union as a whole. If the European Union has to deal with 10 million refugees, we ought to be looking at, you know, some number.
100,000, you know, half a million.
Even a million.
Right.
And, you know,
it's not going to change the national character
in the Arab world and in Europe, mm-hmm. who say that all these crises are the fault of the U.S. anyway. So it's our responsibility to deal with the fallout.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating question. We didn't even talk about the United Nations. Tom, thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears. And individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set for May 29th to June 9th, 2016. If you're interested in going on this fabulous journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, please email tojewishradio18@gmail.com or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A gorgeous woman gets on a bus, clearly distraught, and sits down next to a guy. She is visibly upset and finally can contain herself no longer. She turns to the guy and says, "I just saw my therapist. He says I have a big problem." "What's the problem?" the guy asks. She says, "I can't tell you. I don't even know you." And the guy says, "Well, look, sometimes it's good to tell your problems to a perfect stranger on a bus." So the girl says, "Well, my therapist just told me that I'm a nymphomaniac, and I only like Jewish cowboys. By the way, now that you know, my name is Susan." And the guy says, "Hello, Susan. My name is Bucky Goldstein." I suppose it could have been Kinky Friedman. After all, he'll be on the show in just a few weeks. Anyway, that was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. It's an old story. We know it well. God sees that wickedness and corruption have spread through the world. Human beings are acting in ways that should have been predictable to an all-knowing deity. Lying, cheating, stealing, committing adultery, the usual. In response, God decides to destroy the world in a great flood, rain falling for 40 days and 40 nights, the whole of humanity drowned in the deluge. Only one man is chosen to survive the flood because the Torah text tells us he was righteous in his generation. Noah, in Hebrew, Noah, is chosen to carry the banner of humanity to the next generation. Gathering his family about him and two of each animal, plus seven pairs of each kosher animal, so there's something to eat and something to sacrifice to God if they make it out, Noah builds the ark, loads the boat, goes on not a three-hour cruise, but one long enough to float away every trace of the depravity of humanity in those days. Eventually, he sends out first a raven and then finally a dove to see if the world is dry enough to land on. The dove brings back that famous olive branch. They land and exit the ark. life begins again. A great covenant is affirmed, the first and most enduring breach in human history. God agrees never again to destroy the earth by flood, and we agree to abide by certain minimum standards of morality. It is truly a new beginning. In essence, God acknowledges that this new world will not be the Garden of Eden anymore, but it can be both physically and morally good and rich. Noah, we're told, was a righteous man in his generation. That doesn't necessarily make him a righteous man in every generation, but it does set a reasonable standard that we might live up to. If we can't necessarily succeed in becoming fully righteous for all time, at least we can strive to be righteous in our own turbulent times. All that's required is that we try to be the best we can personally be, seek to be moral and good, when we can choose not to be so. If we do that, choose to be only as good as Noah, we too might end up saving the world. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Mark Hetfield, the president and CEO of HIAS, the legendary Jewish Immigration AIDS Association, will brief us on what is happening in the great refugee crisis, find out what has caused the massive human wave of desperate immigrants, and what we each can do to help the way we, like Noah, can try to save a world or two when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Sadly and predictably, the Palestinian authorities' moves to gain greater recognition for statehood have been accompanied by yet another round of Palestinian terrorist violence against innocent Israeli civilians. Following Mahmoud Abbas's announcement of the Palestinian Authority's intention to abrogate its responsibilities under the Oslo Accords, a series of terror attacks were perpetrated by Palestinian Arabs using knives, guns, and automobiles as weapons in the last 10 days. At least five Israelis have died and a number were wounded in this latest embrace of terrorist violence by the Palestinians. You know, it's very difficult to take the Palestinians seriously as adults who desire a democratic, responsible, peace-loving nation when what they seem best at is violent terror attacks aimed at random Israelis. That and institutionalized corruption, of course. Well, here are some of the specifics of the latest round of Palestinian terror.
Fatah's al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade announced that last week its terrorists opened fire on the car of Eitam and Naama Henkin, a couple in their 30s, while they were driving home from Hebron with four of their six children, aged 4 months to 9 years. The children were fortunately not wounded in the attack, except, of course, that they lost both of their parents in this barbaric act. The victims are the son and daughter-in-law of a U.S.-born couple who founded Nishmat, an institute for advanced Torah study for women in Jerusalem. Fatah is headed by Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority president. It's the largest faction of the Palestine Liberation Organization. The governing body in West Bank area is controlled by the Palestinian Authority. With Allah's help and in keeping with our people's right for resistance and our duty for sacred jihad, our forces fired on a car of occupying settlers that left the settlement of Itamar, built on Palestinian lands in the south of the city of Hebron, the statement from the Fatah right-wing crazy branch said. They fired on the car and killed the settler and his partner. That is, these brave Palestinian Arab terrorists murdered the young father and mother and then ran away. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu said in a statement that wild Palestinian incitement leads to acts of terrorism and murder such as we have seen. He added that they will increase security for all Israeli citizens. In other attacks, an Israeli civilian was seriously injured in a stabbing at the mall in Petah Tikva near Tel Aviv. Police and mall security guards disarmed and subdued the Palestinian Arab terror assailant. The victim, a 25-year-old Israeli, was taken to a hospital in Petah Tikva. The terrorist attacker was identified as a Palestinian man from Hebron. Hamas said the attacker was a member of its terror movement. Moments after that mall attack, a Palestinian teen, 15 years old, tried to stab Israeli border police officers in Jerusalem. Earlier, a Palestinian woman, 18 years old, stabbed an Israeli Jew in the old city of Jerusalem before being shot by the victim himself, and a mob of Palestinians throwing rocks at passing Israeli-licensed cars driving on a road outside Jerusalem tried to drag a Jewish woman from her vehicle and attack her. Also, a Palestinian attacker, another terror attacker, stabbed an Israeli soldier and grabbed his rifle in the southern Israeli city of Kiryat Gat before escaping into a residential apartment building where he was killed in a shootout with police. And the Palestinian attempted to kill two border guards by ramming them with his car. In response to those attacks and others, the Palestinian Authority condemned Israel for killing two of these Palestinian murderers who attacked civilian Israelis in Jerusalem. The Palestinian Authority called on the UN to intervene to protect its citizens, apparently meaning the murderers who stab and attack innocent civilians for the purpose of creating terror. In a statement published on the website of the Wafa Palestinian News and Information Agency, the Palestinian Authority called on the international community to intervene following the killing of two young men in occupied Jerusalem and the series of incursions into cities and villages in the West Bank. This statement by the PA government spokesman somehow failed to mention the fact that the two Palestinian men were killed by Israeli security services when they fled after those murderous attacks on civilian Israelis. The two guys killed were Mohammed Shafek Halavi, 19 years old, a law student from a village near Ramallah in the West Bank, who had stabbed to death two Israeli Jewish men last Saturday night in the old city of Jerusalem. He was killed in a shootout with Israeli troops after he grabbed one of his victim's guns and started firing. And Fadi Alun, a resident of the eastern Jerusalem neighborhood of Isawiya, was killed the next morning while being pursued by Israeli police officers after stabbing a 15-year-old Israeli teen in Jerusalem. Netanyahu held an assessment of the security situation with law enforcement and government officials in Israel in the wake of those attacks. Civilians are at the forefront of the war against terror and must also be on maximum alert, he said, following the meeting in Jerusalem, adding, we have known worse times than this. We will also overcome this wave of terrorism with determination, responsibility, and unity. In response to these many terrorist attacks perpetrated by Palestinian Arab murderers, Israeli police announced that Palestinians were banned from the old city for 2 days. That has been condemned internationally. But the murderous knife, car, and gun attacks on ordinary Israeli citizens, they have not been condemned internationally. Oscar-nominated actor James Franco was bar mitzvah at the age of 37 on October 3rd. The ceremony included the actor wearing a tallis and chanting from the Torah. Franco, whose mother is Jewish, posted a photo on Instagram with a message, "I am now a man. Got bar mitzvah tonight, finally." Of course, a Jewish boy typically has his bar mitzvah at the age of 13. Franco's message included an invitation to the Hilarity for Charity variety show at the Hollywood Palladium on October 17th, raising awareness and money for Alzheimer's disease. The show is sponsored by actor Seth Rogen and his wife, Lauren Miller Rogen. Seth Rogen made the announcement about Franco's bar mitzvah in July. It was covered by Too Jewish. But then, Rogen said, the rabbi wouldn't do it at the actual event, that is the charity event, so he did it at our friend's house. We filmed it. We'll show it at the fundraiser. And the Mets and Dodgers are going at it in a baseball playoff series that has very Jewish overtones. For one thing, Dodgers rookie center fielder Jock Peterson is Jewish, while the Mets owners, the Wilpon family, are also Jewish. For another, both teams have hosts of Jewish fans, me included, and there is the usual ridiculous bet. A Jewish congressman, Adam Schiff, is betting on the Dodgers, and Representative Steve Israel, a Democrat, is betting on the Mets. If the Mets win, Schiff from California pays in popcorn. If the Dodgers win, Representative Israel is on the hook for bagels. Schiff, who represents the area surrounding Dodger Stadium, wagered gourmet popcorn from Pauline's Premier Suites in Burbank, California, befitting his Hollywood district. In Israel, a Mets fan representing areas surrounding Citi Field, wagered New York bagels flown in fresh. May the most Jewish team win! And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews round the world. We welcome back to Too Jewish, Mark Hetfield. He's the president and CEO of HIAS, the venerable and important Jewish immigration organization which helped bring Jews into America, refugees, and now works with refugees all over the world. Mark, why has the world, this is probably, it's a frustrating question, why has the world ignored this obviously burgeoning refugee problem until it reached this huge crisis stage?
That's something I've been asking myself for 3 or 4 years now, because we were waiting for this to happen. And I think basically the answer to that question is that Lebanon and Jordan, while there's plenty to criticize about the way they're treating the asylum seekers, the bottom line is that they have been amazing for a number of years now in terms of how they've been receiving asylum seekers from Syria and refugees from Syria. And we've just sat back and we've looked at it and said, okay, well, it's their problem. We'll give them some money to deal with it, but it's really a Jordanian problem, a Lebanese problem, and they seem to be handling it okay. But yet the refugees kept pouring out of Syria with no end in sight. And so it should have been obvious, but because we didn't actually have a problem on our hands because they were being received in those countries. But it was so obvious to any observer who knows this stuff that this bubble was going to burst, and it's now burst. And it's burst all over Europe, and it's going to hit us as well.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. In addition to all those rabbis like me that spoke about immigration or refugees and getting the United States to accept some of the Syrian refugees, there are people out there saying, well, all of these refugees are male, there are secret terrorists embedded in them. How do you address those kinds of pop critiques?
Well, you know, security issues are nothing new to the refugee program, and that's something we have to remind ourselves, that this was very much an issue during the Soviet Jewry period. When we have to remember that we were part of an effort to let in hundreds of thousands of people from a communist country, from an enemy state, from the Soviet Union, and there was a great deal of concern that the Soviet authorities would use this as an opportunity to plant spies in this country to create real serious security risks for this country. And that was a concern then. Security clearances, security was very much part of the refugee process then. It was a similar concern during the Indo-Chinese refugee crisis with all the Vietnamese refugees. And it's a concern with every refugee crisis, and it's certainly a concern with this one. But I can tell you that having just met with seven families yesterday from Syria, it's not all single men. These are all families that I met with one exception of a single man who is heartbroken because his family was left behind and has not been allowed in yet. But these are all people who are concerned about their families. They just want their families to survive and hopefully do well. Every single one of them had their homes totally destroyed. Every single person I talked to yesterday had their homes destroyed, fled once, couldn't survive in Jordan, and then had to flee again. And these ones were lucky enough to get to the United States. These are all people who their number one priority is their family. Their faith is a high priority as well, and they need their faith to survive the hell that they're going through. But they're not coming here to do us harm. There are some, clearly, who might fit that profile, but that is the rare exception. These are people who, by definition, are fleeing persecution. These are people who, the same argument was used during the Second World War, saying that German Jews shouldn't be admitted into the United States because they're Germans, and they therefore are a security risk. We have to remember, these are people who are fleeing the bad actors. These are people who are fleeing terror, and they are being screened for security purposes. I would say they're being screened too slowly, too inefficiently, that the screening process has really been strangling the refugee program, and not because it's good, because it's inefficient and it needs to be improved. But we can't use that as an excuse to shut our doors to people that are truly fleeing persecution. And especially because if you do that, you're going to have the experience that Europe's having right now, where if you don't let people leave the region, they're going to leave anyway, and then you're not going to have any chance to regulate it. Europe's not really able to regulate its migration right now because people are just showing up. So we have to be a little more proactive and do those screenings overseas before they come here on their own.
Hias, in addition to advocating, tell us specifically about what work Hias is doing now with these refugees.
Well, as I said, our focus is largely on advocacy because there's very little we can do until our partners, the U.S. government and the U.N. High Commissioner for Refugees, are able to do more and have the tools they need to do more and the political will to do more. So advocacy is definitely our priority. That being said, we have resettled in the United States. We resettled about 100 Syrians last year, which is far too few, so we want to do a lot more of that.
And a total of 100, huh?
At Hias.
Wow.
Hias itself has resettled a total of 100.
Right, no, I understand. And I think the president recently said he'd move the number up another 10,000, which really continues to feel like a drop in the bucket.
Right, it is. And we've been pushing for another 100,000.
Right.
For all the agencies to resettle on top of the 70,000 target, which is much more proportionate to the magnitude of
the scope
crisis.
Of the problem, right?
And so, in addition to that, we are also in. We happen to be in Vienna, where we've been for many, many decades, primarily assisting first Soviet Jews and then Iranian Jews, Christians, and Baha'i, which we're still doing. That's their way station to the United States, and suddenly that has become a major hub of course, migrant activity, since so many people go to Austria and either stay there or try to get onto Germany or Sweden from there. So we have redeployed our resources from our Iranian operation, particularly with the Arabic speakers and the Farsi speakers we have on staff who can communicate with the Afghans that are coming in. And they're in the train stations. They're giving them assistance there. They're giving them advice there. They're giving them translation services, and we're doing the same in the Transkirchen refugee camp. And we are looking at doing more, but we're trying to figure out where we can add the most value right now in Europe as well as in the region of origin. We have also been sending over people to work with the UNHCR to identify refugee resettlement cases who are Syrian refugees, and that's something we will continue to do in the region.
I want to thank Mark Hetfield for a great visit here. A great deal more to say about immigration. If people want to find out more, it's hias.org, H-I-A-S.org. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I want to wish you continued success and advocacy on behalf of this enormous refugee problem. Thanks so much for being here on Too Jewish.
Thank you, and Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with me this morning on Too Jewish, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Amit Peled, the wonderful Israeli-American cellist who plays Pablo Casals' cello. He's a warm and engaging guy and a great musician. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from the fun Jewish a cappella group The Maccabees, past guests of Too Jewish, their version of the concluding prayer for most services, Aleinu. May you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week we pray of peace. Aleinu l'shabeach l'adon hakol l'aseis gidula yotzer v'reishis l'aseis gidula yotzer v'reishis.